What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To get the most up-to-date info, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Enjoy. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches podcast. I'm Eddie Townsend, OBCA board member and assistant boys coach at Newport High. Today I'm joined by Ryan Svensson, the new boys basketball coach at Scappoose High School. Coach, how's it going today?
It's going good, Eddie. Glad to be on with you.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming on. Thanksgiving Day, I'm sure you had a ton of turkey and different things. What's the highlight of the day so far?
My wife's a pretty good cook. We always eat well, and it was a little smaller crowd than normal, just my in-laws and my family, so it was nice and small. And but yeah, watching a lot of basketball, and we moved to a little kind of like a hobby farm, basically, a couple of years ago. So we had plenty of stuff to get done today. Nice weather, and just a day outside doing some work and eating food.
Man, it was beautiful. I know. So yeah, I was wondering. So you guys, you've started hoops this season so far. We got about 2 weeks in. We're going to be starting games next week. But for those that maybe don't know you, aren't familiar with you, tell us about your basketball journey up to this point and how you ended up back as the boys' basketball coach at Scappoose.
Yeah, kind of a long circular path to get back to Scappoose. I started teaching and coaching in Scappoose in the fall of 2000, so I'm in my 23rd year in town, and I always tell people, kids all the time, you never know who's watching or who's paying attention to you, and I've been really, really fortunate to be involved in, two really amazing groups and teams, and the whole reason why I even got hired in Scappoose was because I cut somebody's grass when I was 11 years old. And I grew up in Vernonia through ninth grade, and when I was in fifth grade, the guy who lived across the street from us was the superintendent of the school district, and I used to mow his lawn. And I was a pretty conscientious kid, so I guess I must have done a pretty good job. And so fast forward, 14 years, and I'm applying for teaching jobs and run into him at the jobs fair, and he's now the superintendent of Scappoose Schools. And I just said in passing, man, you don't have a history or basketball coaching job open, huh? And he goes, actually, we do. And long story short, I end up getting it, and that was the senior year, my first year with Derek Anderson, senior year. So we win the first of three state titles in football, and I was on the football staff, and we had a great run in basketball, and then our head basketball coach leaves, and Eric Vukula gets hired, and so I got to work under Eric there for the first time. And we had a lot of success in basketball, not nearly as much as he had at West Lynn, but just an incredible run. And coached basketball at Scappoose for 10 years, or I guess nine years. And then took over as the head basketball coach, and, felt like we had things going in the right direction. Then I kind of made a bonehead move and in a morning pickup basketball game, got a little scrap with one of the baseball coaches and got relieved as a basketball coach. And it was, for me, Scappoose was my dream job. It's where I wanted to live and wanted to be. So I was crushed. And, Eric by that point had been at West Lynn for a couple of years, and I got fired on October 1st and was already, had everything planned for the season, and, had coached basketball for, I think I had coached 12 years at that point, and didn't know what else I was going to do. And thankfully, Eric reached out and said, hey, you need to be coaching, and why don't you come join my staff? And so I started this commute to West Lynn every day. And that was the year that was the 2010-2011 season. And it was the year, so this is reference, Peyton Pritchard was a seventh grader that year. But that was the year we had a losing record, and then actually had these two massive upsets in the state tournament or the play-in rounds, and made it to the final eight. And, Eric was great about letting me do a lot of the coaching. And that year, especially, I did a lot of the defensive coaching. And so at the state tournament, Steve Drake, the athletic director at Hillsboro, had just, their job had come open, and he had, was there looking for, you know, maybe a, somebody that could be the next coach. And so after the state tournament, Steve reached out to me, and one thing led to another, and ended up being the head coach at Hillsborough, and did that for 3 years, and then maybe got a little impatient. The principal that hired me left, and then I didn't necessarily feel like the new guy was as supportive as about basketball at Hill High as you kind of needed a spot like that. And so left and went to Westview to be Pat Coons' assistant for 1 year, and learned a lot under Pat and enjoyed my time. And then that off season, Eric Buechel called me up again and said, hey, you know, he goes, I'm going to be done after this year. Why don't you come coach with me my last year at, paid senior year. We're going to get to go do all this great stuff, go to City of the Palms tournament and, you know, some things that are pretty unique opportunities for coaches to get to experience. And so I did that and was just kind of planning on being done for a year or two. My wife, we were pregnant and just kind of thought I'd focus on being a dad for a while. And then out of nowhere, Klatskin High School, right after the state tournament, their job comes open. And I actually graduated from Klatskin High. And so I got offered the job and talked to my wife about it. And I didn't think, you know, there'd be any chance that she would sign off on it. And the whole time, mind you, I'm teaching at Scappoose and commuting to all these places. So spent a lot of time on the road and a lot of time away from my family. But my wife was really supportive about going to Klatskin High. And so we did that for 2 years and kind of got things going and really felt like we were in a really good spot. And then Justin Lunt, the head coach at Pacific University, got hired at Pacific. And Justin's a good friend of mine. And he offered me his full-time assistant position. And so it was just crazy timing. I took the job on a Monday in May, the middle of May. And then Wednesday, I quit my job at Klatskin. Luckily, I didn't quit my teaching job yet. And then Thursday, my wife and I lost a baby. And so it just was really an emotional time for us. And we had lost one earlier. My daughter, who's six now, she was a twin initially, and we'd lost her twin brother. So just the second miscarriage was really, really hard on my wife. And this, we had to deliver this one, and it was just a really tough deal. So after a couple of weeks, I just knew it wasn't going to be a good fit to be, and I wouldn't be able to commit the time that Justin was going to need to kind of get Pacific going. So I called him and backed out of that and did actually just took that year off and just kind of taught and was a dad. And then when Eric Buechel came back to West Lynn, it just was pretty natural for me to go back with him. So I was with Eric for 3 years and obviously got to be around some great kids and be part of a great program again. And then when Eric decided to retire after the year, I decided probably a good time for me just to be done too. And the commute was kind of wearing me out. And so my thought was to just be done. And for a while, coach my son's eighth grade team, and he's got a good eighth grade group, and just kind of relax for a year and go watch some former players play and kind of do some of those things. And then out of nowhere, about a month ago, the Scappoose job opened up. And so not ideal timing, but really wanted to jump at the opportunity to get back to Scappoose and be able to hopefully coach my son in a couple of years and do some of those things. So it's been a kind of a crazy 20 plus years, but it's been a lot of enjoyable times and a lot of great people.
Yeah. I mean, you're pretty well connected and that sounds like, you're touching a number of really good coaches and programs that you're being a part of. I mean, to make it back, into the fold at Scappoose, it's got to feel great. I mean, and not only that, but you look at, what you got coming. I mean, you went from the 5A ranks down to the 4A. How do you guys feel like you're going into this season? I know it was a short turnaround for you to get the job, and then now
they struggled at 5A until last year. They had a really good year last year, lost in the game to go to the state tournament. And I was able to watch them play four or five times last year. And they were a pretty senior heavy team. And then the kid that I think, you know, might've been the best player in 4A, Skyler Schmid, I think Skyler was maybe second team all state in 5A as a junior. He decided to transfer to a prep school, in Los Angeles late last spring. So, basically, I got to think we've got less than 5 points a game coming back. There's only really two guys that played much at all, and you know, neither one of them played big minutes at all. So, you know, everything's brand new, and you know, our guys unfortunately didn't have the opportunity to get in the gym a bunch, but they've been really, really eager and anxious to learn, and have been working hard, and it's been tough trying to cram, you know, kind of 5 months worth of sort of prep into 2 weeks, but you know, we're making the best of it, and the kids are doing a good job, and I think we're going to probably struggle a little bit, especially offensively early on, but I think we finally got our football guys out this week, and I think by, you know, the time we get to February, we're gonna be a pretty tough out for some teams.
Well, yeah, and traditionally Coapa's pretty tough. It seems like this year it might be UNC side going for the league title. I don't know. I don't want to, you know, I don't want any predictions.
Yeah,
but you got Astoria, Tillamook, St. Helens, for those that don't know, and then obviously UNC side. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, traditionally the Coapa has been, at least in the 2010s, has been by far the best league in 4A, and it's a little down right now, I think. But I think, you know, I think Seaside's probably the team to beat, like they have been for a while. Bill's done a really good job of getting their program to a point where they're, you know, they're just one of those programs that are always going to be good. They're young, though, so this is probably, if there's a year they're going to be a little down, this is probably it, but they're still going to be awfully tough. And, you know, I think Astoria feels pretty good about their group. They've got some kids back, and I know they've got a good freshman class that they're pretty high on. And St. Helens has a new coach, and I know he's working really hard, putting a lot of time into getting the kids in the gym. And so I think they're going to be better than people expect. And then, you know, Tillamook, you know, they've got great basketball tradition down there and have had a ton of success over the years. And the coaches work really, really hard. They've kind of had a down cycle of athletes, it seems like, the last, you know, 3-4 years in basketball. But, you know, they're playing tomorrow in the state title football game. And so that usually, you know, has a carryover effect where kids kind of have some confidence. And so I think the league's probably a little down from where it had been maybe 3-4 years ago, but I still think it's going to be pretty tough every night.
Yeah, I mean, normally they got a cream of the crop when it comes to athletes-wise, but, yeah, I think Tillamook playing in the state title game in football is going to be big for you, for the league anyways. But anyways, moving on, my point was just, you know, even if you were a little down, this is like a good year to get into the Coapa as your first year coming back.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think for a year for us to be kind of starting new and I think I agree. It's about as good a soft landing as you're going to have in the Coapa. So happy for it to be this year.
So when you are dealing with, you know, you're assisting some really, I mean, some of Oregon's best coaches. What are some things that, you know, if just off the top of your head that you take from those situations and bring them into your head coaching strategies and planning?
Excuse me. Well, you know, so working with Pat, I think the thing that Pat I thought did a really good job of is, you know, Pat's organizational structure, and then, you know, how he connected with the youth programs. Was really something that anybody would be wise to copy. I mean, there was a real sense of, hey, this is Westview basketball, you know, grade 5 through grade 12. And you know, there was a connection there, and the drills and the offenses and the terminology and all those kind of things were all very similar. And Pat was really active and involved in interacting with the youth coaches and the youth coordinator and you know, the team. So that was definitely a takeaway of some things to do there. And then obviously, I mean, Eric and I are pretty similar personality wise. We're, you know, he's from Astoria, I'm from Clatskanie, and so we kind of grew up in a similar, you know, kind of a similar setting. So, from him, it's interesting the transition he made as a coach, because when we were at Scappoose, I mean, we couldn't have played slower. And I think people remember Eric for his West Lynn teams where we played super fast and scored a ton of points and pressed and trapped and, you know, played a real loose and open style of offense. And I mean, we couldn't have been any different at Scappoose. In fact, we clinched the game to go to state Eric's first year there. Kid hit a jumper with about 2 seconds to go to win 34-32. And I mean, we always felt like if the game got into the 50s, we were in trouble. So, you know, just kind of sort of that willingness to, you know, how to adapt, willingness to change with the times. And then the biggest takeaway from Eric, you know, was just the work ethic, the amount of time you got to spend to be really good and prepare. And, you know, I can't imagine there's a head coach that spent more time at it than Eric. And then the player development piece. I mean, that was everybody always asks, you know, what our secret sauce was at West Linn. And I always felt like, you know, our kids played really, really hard and you know, we ran good stuff and we taught it really well and all those kind of things. But the amount of time our coaches and players spend in the gym, you know, just shooting, offensive moves, you know, skill work, you know, I think it's unparalleled in at least in Oregon. And, I mean, I think that was the biggest secret to the success overall. Obviously, having really, really good players, but those guys got to be really, really good by spending a ton of time in the gym. So that's something we're trying to, you know, implement at Scappoose, is getting the kids in the gym more than we have been.
And you've got this crazy balance, right? I mean, you have been in these programs. You've talked about these kids programs that I would like to get into in a bit. And then you're talking about player development, but you also touched on, you know, I mean, we have families and we got things that we have to stay true to at home. And it's yeah. Very difficult, I feel like, you know, because I pushed all the chips in, you know, at Toledo, and it was fruitful. But it takes a lot of time. And luckily I had, you know, an assistant coach that was a bachelor and he loved to be in the gym with the boys as well. I mean, how do you think how do you juggle all that, especially while you're building and you know that it's the only way that you're going to get over the hump to be one of the elite programs?
Yeah. And I think you got to have an understanding spouse, first of all. And you know, my wife and I, when we were on our third date, I think it was our third date, I remember telling her, you know, the two things
you
I
broke
want
the news to do. That there was another woman. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of my wife and I got together. She already had been married once and has, you know, I've got two stepkids that are out of high school and actually have two granddaughters. So, I mean, that, you know, that my wife is been pretty amazing with all this stuff. You know, the two things I said to her were, hey, you know, before we go like any further with our relationship, you know, I'm going to coach basketball and I want to have kids. And, you know, those two things aren't on your list, and we probably should just call it off now. And, you know, she was in and you know, we've kind of gone from there. But, you know, having a supportive spouse is like, I don't know how you do it, if you don't have that. I mean, it's like impossible, you know, and just the number of times. So like our morning routine, because my son's an eighth grader and we've got a really, really good eighth grade group in Scappoose. And so those kids have spent a ton of time in the gym. I mean, that's kind of the group that sort of, because I had a little more influence over them, you know, being my son and his buddies, and, you know, I've helped coach their team over the years. You know, that's kind of where we've sort of been able to put the West Linn model kind of into play. And so, you know, like this year, I mean, we were in the gym at about 6:50 and, you know, we go for about 45, 50 minutes. And then I run home. Luckily I have first period prep and my principal is really understanding. I run home. My wife has my younger two kids ready. I grab them while I come back into town, and I'm like 6-7 minutes from town. But so I'm driving back into town, drop one off at daycare, drop the other one off at first grade, and then go to school. And my wife goes to work in St. Helens. So, you know, the burden of getting our kids ready in the morning is entirely on her. And, so, you know, you got to have a supportive, you know, spouse, because, I mean, especially when you have as many kids as I do, that it's, you know, it's like you're a single mom for a lot of the year, and it can be a lot. And so I think that's the first key, is you got to have that at home if you want to be really good at it. And she knows, like, I'm not going to do this and be, you know, kind of halfway in. And so she's pretty amazing in terms of taking on more of that stuff at home and freeing my time up to go and do that. But I mean, it's a challenge. I mean, cause you want to, you know, you want to try to be really good at every role in your life, you know, and, you know, as a teacher and a parent and a spouse, and I have a business on the side that, you know, try to run. And so there's a lot. And, you know, it's, I think for me, I've always, I mean, I'm old school. I've got like an old school planner. I write, you know, have to write everything down on, and trying to be really organized to start the week with what are the things, priority things I need to get done, you know, in kind of all areas of my life, and trying to make sure I do that, and still trying to stay connected with friends and family. It's definitely a challenge. I'm lucky. I'm not a big sleeper. So, you know, I'd probably sleep 5-6 hours a night. It's probably not healthy, but I've always been able to kind of function without a lot of sleep. So I'm always able to steal a few extra hours in the day, but it's definitely not easy, and it can definitely put a strain on, you know, relationships and those kind of things.
So when you're talking about, you know, building a championship program, which you've been a part of, I mean, take somebody that hasn't done that, and, you know, maybe they're the coach of a lower winning program, or maybe a middle of the road program, and they want to kind of jump over the top, or maybe people are just getting new ideas and they are at the top. What does that time commitment look like? What are the types of things that you're doing? How often are you in the gym to be one of those top programs? And I know it might be different, you know, for an elite 6A program to maybe a 4A or even a 2A program, but what is your experience and what gets you there?
Yeah. You know, I think, Westland's a little unique, that in the 6A, you know, I think there's other 6A programs that do that, but, you know, like Eric always had a basketball class in the morning. So I think they called it court sport, and it was open to anybody, but it was, you know, mainly the basketball players, boys and girls would come in and get a PE credit. So, you know, for him, it was, but he did, I mean, he's doing it now that he's not the basketball coach. He's still opening the gym and doing those workouts. So, you know, for us, you know, my long-term plan, I mean, we're going to open the gym, you know, probably, you know, my plan is to be, you know, at least 4, if not 5 days a week in the morning. And part of that is that the OSAA changed the rules. So those of us in 4A and above, we get into this where you can't do anything the first 6 weeks of, you know, so for the fall, we couldn't do anything for the first 6 weeks. Whereas like 3A and below, you guys still operate under the rule too. You know, then we get into those months where we can have contact with our kids. I mean, we're going to go 4 or 5 days a week and you know, and it's just making the gym available to kids that want to get in there. We're really going to encourage all our guys to play, you know, multiple sports and be multi-sport athletes. And I'm the head golf coach, so I mean, I try to model that too. And, you know, but we want to make it available to guys where they can come in and get a lot of shots up and do skill work in the morning. And you know, I think the way basketball has gone, you know, in the last decade, and the way it's going to go even more under the shot clock, I mean, it's about players making plays and having the skill level to do that. And so, you know, we've got a great strength and conditioning program in Scappoose. I think that part of it's taken off my plate. All the kids have weight training during the day. I think if you want to be good, your kids got to lift. And our guys at Scappoose haven't necessarily lifted the last couple of years. You know, the coach before me didn't emphasize it as much. So we're getting back. You know, that was one of my messages to the parents at the parent meeting and to the kids is we're a program that lifts. I mean, all of our guys are going to be weight room guys. It's not going to be like an optional thing. So that part's handled during the school day. And then we're going to put in, you know, a lot of work in the morning, and have it be a regular, you know, hey, we're in there at 6:50 and here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a lot of shooting, a lot of skill work. We'll do some small sided games. But we don't play a lot of 5-on-5. You know, I don't want guys that are, you know, multi-sport guys getting hurt playing 5-on-5. And, you know, I think there's plenty of time to do that in the summer and then during the season. But, I think the way basketball's gone, you got to be skilled and you got to be able to shoot. So, I mean, that's really our emphasis. So if I was, you know, I'm in that situation now, but I mean, that would be, you know, my message is find those kids that want to get in the gym. And then the other thing I think is you're trying to change the culture of a program and change the mindset. You got to be willing to play, you know, the best kids regardless of grade. Sometimes it's easy to say that, but then the heat that comes with playing a freshman over a senior, you know, isn't always, and especially in a small town, it's not always the most fun thing. But if you're really serious about the long-term culture and there's a younger kid that can play and he's worked and has deserved it, then you got to play him. And, you know, we've, At Hillsborough and at Clatskanie, I mean, I started freshman in both places, you know, and trying to get the programs going and, you know, just kids that had put in time, and they were the best players, and they had outworked the older kids, and it, you know, rubbed some parents and kids the wrong way. But, you know, I mean, sorry, you got to get in the gym. I mean, that's just part of the deal. If you're going to have this culture where we're getting better and you're not doing it, then you're going to get passed up, you know. And Sean McNabb, our football coach, has always got he always has had a great saying. His quote is always, "Hey, we're not going to hold against you. You're holding against yourself." And that's kind of the message. Like, if you're not in the gym, somebody is, and they're going to get better, and they're going to pass you up eventually. So those would be the things I would focus on. And then, you know, in the summer, I mean, just playing a ton, you know, playing as much as you can. I don't think you need to go crazy into July, but from, you know, Memorial Day to the 4th of July, you know, it's just kind of the summer league window. You know, play a bunch. Put your guys in situations where you're playing against teams that are better than you and against kids that are better than you, and then help your best players find opportunities to play against better competition, whether that's on a good AAU team or whether that's going to a college and letting them play in open gyms, or whether that's hosting open gyms with some of the best players in your area. We did that at Hillsborough, at open gyms for, you know, just our two or three best guys as we were trying to get things going. And we had kids come from Century and Westview and some of the other area high schools, you know, to try to create a real competitive environment, and you know, really help those guys that from our program that played in those.
So when you're talking about a couple things of what you just said, so, and I agree with you, I don't think anybody's going to be winning, you know, a lot of state tournament games going forward at in the 30-point, 40-point range anymore after, especially after next year. So it's going to be about shot making and playmaking, like you said. What do you think are the, you know, if you're to say, hey, these are the top two or top three things that we are working on that we are going to hang our hat on as a, you know, playmaking, I guess, fundamental set that we work on. What are those things? And then the second thing is, you know, you're talking about summer league and getting games in. What do you think a good number of games is to play during the summer?
I think we've had teams where we've played like 45, 50 games. And then I think in that 25 game range is really probably the right number. You know, if you're playing like 3 or 4 weekends, you're going to get 15 to 20 there, and you know, a couple nights a week. You know, I've liked to do things during the week where we bring a couple other teams in, and then you almost make it more like a controlled scrimmage, you know, where you, hey, for this, you know, 10-minute chunk, we're going to work on, you know, you run zone, we'll work on our zone offense, and we'll switch that up, and, you know, really be specific on what you're working on, and then also have it where whoever you're working with, you know, you have a relationship with their coach where, you know, I used to do this when I was at Hill High. Joel Sabaka had just gotten the job at Valley Catholic, and we did this a lot. We would get together and we would have like structured scrimmages where we would work on specific things for a chunk of time. And then if there was a time in that where, you know, like, God, we were really struggling with this concept, you know, we would stop and Joel would get his guys back into whatever look we wanted them to get in, and we'd walk through it so they could kind of see it almost like we would at a practice situation. So, you know, finding opportunities like that, I think, is really valuable too. But I think if you're around 25, I think sometimes you can get a little carried away with just playing games. And I don't remember my record, you know, JV varsity coach. Like, I can kind of get you a ballpark of, yeah, that year we were pretty good. I think we were around this, but I have no clue in the summer. And there's some guys that, you know, I mean, I don't even know in the moment what we are in the summer. Could never tell you. And there's some guys that put maybe a little too much importance on winning the actual summer game. I mean, if you watch West Lynn play in the summer under Eric, I mean, it's pretty much equal minutes, for rotating five guys in at a time and giving everybody a chance to play a bunch and test themselves against, you know, different situations and scenarios. And, you know, very, very rarely do we treat it like a regular game. In fact, when I was at Scappoose as a JV coach, there was a couple times where I would take the team in the summer and then I would actually coach it a little more to win. And, he'd tell the kids to look around like, geez, Coach Ucolo, we all got to play, and Coach Benson's here, and I only played, you know, only played 8 minutes or something. So, but I think, you know, you don't want to get too caught up in the wins and losses of the summer. It's more about, you know, the player development and putting them in situations to do the stuff you've been working on all spring. But as far as the drill work, I mean.
Oh yeah, go ahead. Sorry about that.
I was going to say, you know, for us, I mean, we try to shoot a ton, whether, you know, and that'll change, you know, day to day. A lot of times it might be penetrate kick. You know, we run primarily five out type concept. So, you know, we're not going to be coming off screens a whole lot. So we don't do a ton where we're coming off like screen, but we will do stuff where it's on the move. So it's penetrate, you know, guys penetrate, and then we're lifting behind them and, you know, catch and shoot, or slide to a corner, catch and shoot. And then, you know, I think as you know, the way basketball is going and the way the shot clock is going to change things, you know, I think we do a lot of stuff off ball screen action. So we drill a lot of work on ball screen reads. We will run a lot of ball screen action into our five out. And so, you know, the ability to attack a ball screen and attack different coverages, you know, and then just a variety of different finishing moves at the hoop. You know, I think those things are all really important off 2 feet and off 1 feet, or off 1 foot. And then we always try to make sure too, is as we're doing stuff, we're working on different types of passes. So, you know, if you watch us play, I mean, you're probably going to think, God, I mean, they're kind of throw a lot of one-handed passes, but I mean, we actually drill that a bunch where, you know, hey, you're dribbling in our five out, and the only pass you have is really a one hand off the bounce pass. And, you know, so we want them to practice that. So when we're in that scenario in a game, you know, we feel comfortable, we have that muscle memory, but you also can throw that, you know, accurately. And, so, you know, those are all things that we try to emphasize and drill.
And so one thing I wanted to just touch on is, you know, this, let's say you're a team that hasn't won a ton of games, or maybe middle of the road, and you're building and you're going in the summer. Would you be a guy that would want to challenge yourself, you know, and maybe, you know, get kind of a bad taste in players' mouth, or maybe play level or lower competition just so you can kind of get some winning in during the summer, even if it's not a real thing, if you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I think there's some value in that. I think there's value in having some balance there. Because I think what happens if you schedule down, you know, and you win a bunch of games, sometimes it can, you know, it gives you confidence, but sometimes it can be a false confidence. And so I think there's value in recognizing, like, hey, where are you at? And then, you know, trying to play better teams. So, like, when I took over at Klatskanai, they've been fairly average so that first year we tried to schedule games where, you know, we felt like, hey, we're going to at least be competitive. We weren't going to get overmatched. We'd have a chance to win, you know, a bunch of them. And then the second summer, you know, we had a bunch of guys back. And so the second summer we tried to schedule really, really hard for our level, you know, so we were a small 3A school. We were playing, you know, mostly 4A and 5A schools in the summer, trying to force our guys to play against better competition. And, because we were in that league at the time with all the Portland private schools, so we were playing really good teams in our league. So there wasn't going to be a lot of value in trying to, like, we already kind of had the culture of, like, okay, we can be competitive, we can be, you know, successful, so now let's play against really good teams in the summer. So I think you got to kind of assess where you're at and then schedule accordingly. And, you know, the nice thing for me, selfishly, you know, typically in the summer, you know, that's my side business. I run basketball events all summer, and so we play in our, and, you know, we'll play in my tournaments, and week to week, I'll be able to look at, you know, what guys I'm going to have that week and kind of schedule accordingly, you know. And if we're going to have all our guys, you know, then we'll play a little tougher. If we're going to be missing a few key guys, then maybe we won't play as tough a weekend schedule. So, but I think there's value in both of those things. You know, you don't want to, you want basketball in the summer to be fun. And, you know, if you're getting, I mean, I can remember my first game at Hill High in the summer. Our AD had already scheduled our summer and the league, not the tournaments, but the league we were in. And our first game was against Jesuit. And they had, you know, I mean, I think they had four guys on their team that ended up being Division I offensive linemen. You know, and I didn't have a kid over 6'1". And I mean, it could have gotten really ugly. And Gene Potter was really, really classy about not, you know, embarrassing us and just beating our kids down. And so, you know, there's no value. There wasn't any value for Jesuit. There wasn't any value for us in playing that game. So, you know, I think you want to be selective with that stuff.
For sure. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We'll return more from Coach Svensson when we get back on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Stay up to date with the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association on social media at facebook.com/OregonBCA We're on Twitter at OR Hoop Coaches.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Eddie Townsend here with boys basketball coach at Scappoose High, Coach Ryan Svensson. Hey, Coach, I wanted to, just touch on this. You've had a huge swing of experiences being an assistant head coach at a number of different schools, you know, coaching a number of high-level players, running, you know, youth programs, high school programs, assisting a bunch of state title teams, even elite players, I mean, NBA players. What are some of the main things you see as important in growing a program like that? I know we've touched on it a little bit, but if you could just put, like, we're going to put a theme on this of what it is, what it takes to get there outside of just having extremely talented athletes, what would that be?
Yeah, I think having the gym open, you know, making it a community thing where it's, you know, that's what we're trying to get to is, you know, it's been a real disjointed thing here, you know, where the youth program's been totally separate from the high school. And so trying to get everybody on the same page and, you know, hey, this is Scappoose basketball. It's not Scappoose fifth grade, Scappoose eighth grade, Scappoose 10th grade. You know, we're all one big family. So trying to create that family atmosphere where, you know, basketball is a big thing in the community. And I think you do that by being really involved as a head coach, and going to practices and making yourself available to the coaches and sending your players to practices if the schedule allows. And then you got to go you got to go watch your youth teams play. And, you know, in the past when I've been a head coach, I've been, you know, I was single. And so I would go every weekend that our youth teams played. I would always go one of the 2 days of a weekend tournament and watch all of our teams play. And I just think you got to be a presence, you know, with your youth. You want to be successful. And then you got to have the gym open for your youth kids and your high school kids. You know, you got to have, you know, the gym open, and they've got to have access to be able to shoot and be able to get it, you know, because the way most school districts are going, it's hard for kids to get in the gym if the coaches aren't opening it up. And, you know, so I take that really serious. And that was something Eric was really, I mean, the gym at Westland was always open, and our coaching staff, you know, Eric and assistants were, for you, for the youth, for high school, I mean, it was always open, and guys were always in the gym. And you know, we're hopefully going to try to model that at Scappoose. But that's the thing. I mean, if you want to be good, it's basketball's a tough sport to be good at without putting in just a ton of time. I mean, because it's such a skill-based sport that, you know, you can have some success as a football coach if you've got a really good run of athletes and you got a good weight program. And, you know, the X's and O's part's important, but it's not as important about as having the athletes. But, you know, basketball, you got to have guys that are skilled. That doesn't happen without the gym being open a bunch. So I think that would be my theme my biggest takeaway would be, you know, make the gym open a bunch and really make sure you're communicating with all the different groups in your program and that they know it's open and that they're invited to come, and then try to get youth coaches there too, seeing the kind of drills you're doing, so that then they're carrying those back to their practices.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I mean, we, you know, since coming back to Newport, and they've already been doing it, but, you know, we've been doing it more in the last 2 years of just unifying the youth program for Newport. And, you know, it's been one of those deals where, like you said, there's these satellite programs like, oh, here's the fifth grade and here's the third grade, or, well, not third grade, but, you know, all the way up.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple teams in our league. Their youth teams don't even go by their, like, high school team name. They're like, you know, the tackles or, you know, whatever. I mean, they're not even,
right.
You would walk in and, you know, they're not wearing the school colors. They're not, they don't have the name on there. I mean, to me, that's crazy.
You can't do it.
Like,
no.
You know, it's just crazy that as a head coach, you would allow that to go on. But, you know, a lot of times head coaches don't want to invest that time. And so that's why the burnout rate's so high in basketball, right? I mean, it's a ton of time. Like, you know, my wife probably wasn't real excited when we got done with practice last Thursday and I went and, you know, met with all our youth coaches for a half hour. You know, she knows that's what we got to do to get things going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, right. And I wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't the case, but my son is, you know, he's young. So I'm coaching third grade, fourth grade, and, you know, obviously I'm assisting at the high school. So it's like, it's crazy. There's no way I would do it unless my son was involved. But it's what, yeah, as I'm in it, you're like, oh, man, if you don't start this early, you know, you just got to be lucky, or you have to have a really good set of parents that are, and then in that case, you're lucky because they're good parents and they know what to develop. But yeah, I mean, it's so huge. And then obviously what you're saying, you know, like suiting our kids up, and so they're just decked out in Newport stuff or decked out in Scappoose stuff, or I actually used West Lynn as an example. We'll go to some of these tournaments in West Lynn, just like everybody looks like West Lynn High School. I have no clue what they look like, but they've got the colors, they've got the logo. They all kind of have a similar feel to them. They're always winning. And you're just like, yeah. There's no, it's not like a, you know, a surprise that that's happening, you know, and that you can, I could probably guess who the, in the next 5 years, who the best teams are going to be, because I see them at these tournaments all the time. And so I think you hit it right on the head. And so when it goes to those youth, you know, you talked about Westview. I just wanted to touch base on that. I mean, what is your opinion on what that looks like? I know you've kind of dropped some hints of, you know, we're stopping by and we're talking to coaches, maybe having meetings with them. Will you want them to run your stuff? You know, maybe they're geared up in Westview or Scappoose or whatever. What are some other things that, like, are some key markers of a great youth program?
Yeah, you know, I think I'd probably change it on this a little bit from maybe when I was younger. You know, I think you want them to run your stuff, but I don't know that them running your exact offense is necessarily as important as, you know, what they're teaching. So, like, I talked to our guys the other day, and you know, obviously just getting the job a couple weeks ago, I haven't been as hands-on as I hopefully will be in the future. But, you know, I talked to the guys and you know, they're all volunteers. And, I mean, in a couple situations, you know, like our fifth-grade coaches, that neither guy even played basketball in high school. There was nobody else to do it, so they jumped in or, you know, and are taking it on. And so they're anxious to learn and appreciate, you know, me reaching out and giving them ideas. And so I just talked to them about, you know, we get an hour and a half to practice. I think our youth teams get two days a week, 1 week and 3 days the next. So they're getting, you know, five practices every 2 weeks. And so, you know, in that hour and a half, like, how do we structure our practice? What does that look like? And you know, I said, hey, I think here's how a good way to approach breaking it up. And I, you know, 30 minutes of skill work, where the bulk of that is shooting, like shooting, ball handling and passing stuff. And then you go 30 minutes of small-sided games, you know, and whether that's one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, whatever, but something where we're creating, you know, competitive environments for the kids to work on some of those skills we just learned. So they're getting their repetitions while also making basketball reads and basketball plays. And then the last 30 minutes, or however you split it up, you know, 30 minutes of that hour and a half is, you know, for team time, where you're working on press break and press and offenses and whatever. Because like I told them, at the end of the day, I mean, fifth grade team's not going to win because you're running flex or you're running whatever. They're going to win because you got a kid or two that can make big basketball plays. And so, you know, I think sometimes youth guys that have only been youth coaches maybe see it or think it's the opposite way. We got to run really good offense. It's like, well, no, you're going to win because you got, you know, really skilled players. And so working to help all those kids develop the skill, you know, the skill level, I think is really important. So, I talk to them more about that. You know, I think as, like, say, next year when we have more time and we can meet with those guys in the spring and in the fall, and we'll do more of, like, hey, here's things we'd like to see you running, and give them a few things each year to build on it. But I don't think, you know, when I was young, I was, you know, God, they need to run all of our stuff, exactly how we run it. I'm like, you know, that I don't know that that's necessarily, you know, how you have to do it anymore. I mean, I think they're going to pick stuff up if they're skilled and you're running five out type concepts. They're going to pick stuff up pretty quickly, you know, as they get into high school. If the practices have been structured in a way that, you know, they have the skill work time, they have the time to apply it in a small sided game situation. And then, you know, whatever they're doing in team time is fine. So that's kind of the approach I'm taking now, and making sure those guys feel really valued as youth coaches. And you know, the kids know who you are as a head coach and know that you care about them and know that you're excited about having them in your program. So, and I think you do those things and they're excited to come to the, you know, the morning workouts and the skill workouts that you're going to run for them and your youth camps and whatever other stuff you have going on. So.
Yeah, that's great. And so as you take over the job and you're coming in, I mean, obviously, Skep Hoos won a state title, was it 7 years, 6 years ago?
At this point? 2015.
And then, okay, that's a while ago. And now, you know, they've had some down and then they had a good season last year. So you come in, what are the, you know, what are the main things that you're trying to establish right now? Is it just installing your stuff or is there like an identity that you're trying to impose on the kids from day one?
You know, yeah, I think just getting our stuff put in and then getting it back to where, you know, big picture where, hey, we're, you know, it's Scappoose basketball. It's not just, you know, the varsity team, the freshman team, that we're not these separate entities, that we're a combined deal. And then getting them back to, you know, where there's a sense of like, hey, I care about my teammates. I love the guy next to me. I'm going to play really, really hard for him. And then offensively trying to get the identity that we're going to play really fast and, you know, we're going to be really, really hard to guard because we're going to play up tempo, both in the half and in the full court. And so getting some of that we got to get more skilled and that's going to come with time. But, you know, just getting that mindset of like, hey, we're going to be really hard to guard and we're always going to be on the attack. And, you know, those were things that I really took away from West Lynn, more than anything else, you know, from an offensive standpoint. So obviously we're not going to have West Lynn kind of guys right now, but, you know, trying to instill that mindset where we're constantly on the attack and we're thinking about playing downhill all the time. And, you know, we're shot ready or attack ready on every catch and just changing that mindset because they played really, really slow last year. And a lot of the guys that most guys we have back didn't play. And those that did play JV and our JV crew wasn't very good. So, you know, just trying to get that kind of competitive piece back and you know, get them where we're kind of playing for each other too.
So you come in and you've been you've done a little coaching with West Lynn on the defensive side. And I mean, I've coached against you when you were at Klatskanai. What are some things that you hang your hat on defensively? Like what are some defensive principles that you teach? And then when it comes to offense, what do you think, you know, you're pushing tempo? Is it just five out, pass cut, attack, or what kind of stuff are you doing?
Yeah, so, you know, defensively, I think we're going to try to be multiple defensively. So we're going to be, and part of this is I'm looking at things going, okay, you know, if I'm coming in brand new and I mean, literally everything we're going to be teaching is brand new to everybody. I mean, I don't have an assistant on my staff that I've worked with before. So, you know, everything's brand new to those guys. Everything's brand new to our kids. And I'm looking a year ahead. I'm going, you know, everybody's going to change next year. And I think you just look to the guys in Washington and see how basketball has changed at the high school level up there. So I said, you know, why don't we just kind of get a head start on that whole process and put in stuff that's going to be, you know, shot clock kind of driven on both sides of the equation. So that's what we're trying to do. So, you know, we're going to be, you know, multiple defensively. We're going to, you know, run some full court zone pressure, you know, kind of how aggressive we'll be will change with times. We're going to play a lot of 2-3 matchup zone. And we had a lot of success with that at Hillsboro. And I went down a couple weeks ago and met with the Oregon guys and kind of went through their stuff with them and then talked to some smaller college level guys that have had a lot of success running that. And then we'll do a lot of what we did at West Lynn where, you know, we'll play, you know, in the half court, we'll be basically switch all screens, trap all ball screens. And I think we'll probably pick and choose our spots just pressure wise, a little more than maybe we did at West Lynn, as we work to build our basketball IQ and our skill level. But, you know, that'll be what we do defensively. And then offensively, you know, we're going to look to play really fast and then, yeah, a lot of five out and you know, trying to create space and get our best guys going downhill.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about that. So when we're talking about the shot clock coming in, I mean, what are your expectations on, I don't know, I haven't looked at the data, but, and I don't even know if it's going to be 35 or 30 or what it is, but, I mean, how...
My understanding is it's going to be 35.
35. So then, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Just talking to people... I don't know if you have of that transition and what does it look like? I mean, is it going to be a big difference for Oregon basketball? I know at the end of game and end of quarter, it'll be different. But, I mean, when it comes to, you know, how many possessions does it change, and what does that look like?
Yeah, I think that's where you're going to see it more is, you know, late game, end of quarter type things, you know. I mean, our best offense, honestly, when I was at Klatskin, was basically like a four corner. We call it three high. We had three, you know, our three guards across the top and put our, you know, our big in one corner and our best shooter in the other corner. And, you know, we just made teams come out and guard us. And if we were ahead late, I mean, that was, we were going to hold it until you came out and guarded us. And, you know, I've always been a believer that, I mean, everybody, you know, bitches about the offense when there's a low scoring game, or, you know, where somebody holds the ball, you know, teams only hold the ball if you let them. And so, you know, I wasn't necessarily, I mean, I think I'm glad we're going to have a shot clock, but, you know, I think everybody that thinks it's going to be this panacea cure-all for the ills of high school basketball is misled. You know, at the end of the day, if your guys aren't in the gym, all they're going to be doing now is taking, you know, quicker bad shots. And so
most bad players or bad teams, they can't even hold the ball for 35 seconds.
So right, really, exactly, you know, exactly. So, you know, now you're going to, I mean, you're going to, that's just going to be magnified. So I think it does. I mean, I think it does. I think it could potentially have a negative impact on teams that maybe aren't as athletic and physical, but are maybe skilled in basketball IQ, that are a little more deliberate with what they want to do. You know, I think about a team like Junction City. You know, Craig Rothenberger's been there, and they're really good, really talented, and they got, you know, they've got decent athletes. They've got, you know, but they play kind of a deliberate style, and they're comfortable playing in the 40s. You know, so I think a team like that who, you know, I think it could potentially hurt them because they're going to have to completely change how they play. And they've had a lot of success playing the way they have over the years. So, but, I think overall, I mean, I'm excited for it. I like the idea of just kind of from a coaching perspective, just the, you know, all the little dynamics it creates, the two-for-ones and, you know, all those little wrinkles. When are you going to foul late in the game versus just trying to defend to get the ball back? And, you know, my first experience coaching in the shot clock, we played, when I was a coach at Scappoose before, we played at Napa Vine High School up kind of by Centralia, and they were really good, small school. And so we're up five with about a minute 30 to go, and we get a stop, get a rebound, we come down, and they're in a 2-3 zone, like sagging 2-3. And I just saw our point guard, I go, hey, hold it. And, I'm looking at my assistants like, what are they doing? Why are they, and you know, cause in Oregon, yeah, you'd be up and getting into people and, you know, being real aggressive, trapping, maybe fouling that early, depending on, you know, your situation. And they're just letting us hold the ball. And then with about 8 seconds to go on the clock, my assistant goes, oh, shit, shot clock. And so we, you know, burped something up, you know, really quick. And but that was a good reminder that, like, hey, this is going to be a different world with the shot clock. And so I'm excited about just the coaching element of that piece of it. But, I think you'll see more teams playing, you know, matchup type zones, pack line type Ds. I think you'll see less teams extending their pressure, you know, man to man in the half court. You know, teams like Wilsonville, I think they'll be like outliers and not the norm. I think you'll see teams playing, you know, maybe a little more conservative defensively, trying to make offenses spend more time and to force a kind of a rush shot later in the clock.
Do you think that it makes sense to run like a soft 2-2-1 or something just to make teams have to burn six, you know, even if you can get them to burn 5, 6, 10 seconds to get over the half court line? What are your thoughts on that strategy?
Yeah, no. And that's a big part of what we're, you know, if you watch Oregon's, you know, their full court pressure, you know, for the most part, it's just kind of a soft 1-2-2, you know, working their way back to a matchup 2-3 zone, and we're gonna you know, run a lot of that same stuff, and you know, I think we talked to Dana and those guys, that's a big part of why they do that. It's just to try to keep the other team a little uncomfortable, a little off balance. You know, they're gonna get a couple cheap steals here and there, but for the most part, it's, you know, they're trying to shrink the clock by 6, 7, 8 seconds every possession, and you know, make the other team do something that they don't normally do. You know, we always talk, and it'll be interesting to see how this changes our mindset. And when we're ahead, you know, late in the game, it's, you know, layups and free throws. That's all we're shooting. And, you know, so that mindset's gonna have to change. Like, so now with a minute 30 and it's late in the shot clock and you've got to, you know, or maybe even 10, 15 seconds of the shot clock, you know, what's a good shot now? You know, minute 30 up 6, right now with no shot clock, you know, I don't really want to shoot the three. I mean, we're layups and free throws. But next year, that, you know, that open three with 10 seconds on the clock from your kid that shoots 38% from three, that might be a pretty good look, you know. So going to have to spend a lot of time in the offseason, you know, especially in the offensive piece of, like, what kind of shots we want to take. And then how, you know, the best way to you know, teach the kids those things is going to be really important. But I think, too, you're going to see, you know, just like with a college game, you're going to see a lot of late clock ball screen action and, you know, your best player trying to get him downhill and let him make plays for himself or others. So,
yeah, I'm looking at this article on OSAA Today by Jerry Ulmer in September of this year. You know, he's got some good quotes. Marshall Cho at Laco said, you know, basically the game's in the hands of the players. You know, having a shot clock just basically advances that. Whereas on the other side, you got.
So I'm gonna send you a video of Lake Oswego West Lynn from about 3 years ago, where Marshall held it on us for about a minute. In fact, at one point I yelled at him, I thought you were the shot clock guy. So it's funny, the guys that are the big shot clock advocates, they still they take advantage of the rules when they can.
If you have that to your advantage, you'd be a fool not to use it, especially in the game, in the quarter.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be good for the game. You know, it's going to force people to – it's going to force programs to let their kids become more skilled. And, you know, so those of us that are already kind of trending that way, you know, running five-out type stuff, running ball screen type stuff, you know, where we're not running as much pattern stuff, I think we're going to have an advantage, you know, especially early on. Because, I mean, you're not going to see teams being able to run, you know, a bunch of flex. And, you know, like Oregon, you know, Dana Altman's known for this high-post offense they call spread. And, you know, when I ran it in Hillsboro, it was kind of a delay game for us. We weren't real talented, and we used it as, like, I mean, we were trying to score, but weren't really trying to score. I mean,
but it really is a great offense.
Yeah,
that offense is a great offense.
But you know, like now we're gonna run some of it, but it's gonna be like one time into our five out. You know, you're not gonna be able to turn an offense like that, you know, two, three times like you could with no clock. So I think, you know, I think coaches that have run patterned offenses for years are going to have to adapt, or they're going to struggle. Guys that aren't comfortable teaching ball screen stuff are going to, you know, I mean, that's the reality of a late game. I mean, a late clock, you know, scenario is it's going to be a lot of ball screen time. How are you going to get your guy, your best guy, you know, opened up to be able to attack and make a play? So, guys that are uncomfortable with those things are, you know, there's going to be a big learning curve for them for sure. You know, and so I think, you know, being around Eric, especially since he's been at West Lynn, I mean, I think, you know, it's created a comfort level for me where that's how we want to play anyway. The kids like it better, and, you know, it's more enjoyable to play fast, to play up and down. And so, you know, I mean, I'm excited about that part of it. I understand those guys' point I don't think it's going to make better basketball unless guys get their kids in the gym more, you know. So that part I don't think is like a cure-all, that just because we have a shot clock, all of a sudden you're going to have games in the 70s. You know, I don't think that's going to be the case. You look at Washington, that hasn't been the case up there. I mean, there's still a lot of games in the 40s and low 50s. So, you know, I think people will adapt, and the good coaches will be the ones that can adapt the most.
I love that. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I was, and going back to the spread, you know, I went to the NCAA tournament. I think it was back in 2016, and Stephen F. Austin was there. And Brad Underwood was coaching, and he runs the spread. And I was like, man, what is this offense? I love this. And then, I think we played you guys, and you guys were running it. And that's where, you know, I want to say it was somewhere along that timeline when I kind of discovered what it was. And, you know, so what are your thoughts on that? Where you think it's kind of a slow down, but those programs, you know, Brad Underwood at Stephen F. Austin, and then he went to Oklahoma State, and I was at Illinois. Obviously, Dana Altman at Oregon. These high-profile programs are running it, and what are your thoughts on that? Is it kind of a relic, or is it something that works, or do you hang your hat on?
No, I think something like that works. It's just you're not going to be able to, you're not going to run it side to side to side to side to side. You know, you're going to have to run it, you know, maybe turn it side to side one time, and then have a plan of, okay, we haven't got a shot we like. What are we going to do? What's that? You know, what's our under 10 second trend, you know, look gonna be. And, you know, those guys run it at a pretty high tempo. And, you know, when I was at Hillsboro, we weren't very athletic. athletic, and we were trying to kind of slow it down. And so it was more like we were grinding, running spread, trying to, you know, really grind teams. And then at Kloskinen, we were pretty athletic, so we ran it, you know, at a much faster pace, and we're a lot more aggressive with some of the actions and, you know, opening guys up to attack downhill, you know, out of it. So, you know, I think, I mean, I still plan on running, you know, pieces of it and using elements of it even next year under the clock. But like I said, I think it's just going to be like, for us, it's going to be more, and this is kind of what Dana even uses it for now, is more like, hey, when our kind of our motion five out, whatever you're running, is a little stagnant, then you go to some of that, because there's some force movement, some force cuts, just to sort of force some movement and get guys moving a little bit. But you watch Oregon, they don't run it side to side a bunch, or if ever. And even Illinois, who runs it better than anybody, they, you know, that for them, it's, you know, once, maybe twice, and then they're getting into something, a ball screen or something, to try to get a shot late in the clock.
So switching gears.
I think you can make you can adapt everything. If you're a flex guy, you can still run flex. It's just, you haven't been able to run it for as long as you have previously.
Yeah, but at the end of the shot clock, you're just going to have somebody that can make buckets.
Yeah, at the end of
it. You know, it's like,
so
switching gears, you know, just nuts and bolts of coaches that are wanting to know how you run your program. You know, what do you do with, you know, players that your season's going along, they're not completely bought in, but the season's already going, and you want to reset the tone with that player? What are some things, you know, that you do to kind of, if you haven't weeded that out before, things have already gotten rolling?
Yeah, you know, and that's an area I've really tried to learn and get better at. And, you know, one of Regan Tufts, who's at Sherwood now, was my JV coach when I was the head coach before. And, you know, he's really, really good at that stuff. And so that's an area I've really tried to learn and improve on. And so we're trying some things this year where I think communicating really early about roles and about things that you're seeing and wanting, you know, things that kids are doing well, and then things that you're wanting them to get better at really early is really important. So, you know, this year we're, you know, every week we're meeting with every kid in our program and, you know, informally. And so, you know, I might grab the varsity guys, you know, and it might just be when we're warming up and pull a kid aside and rebound while they're shooting free throws and just talk to them about, hey, here's, you know, how you're doing these couple things really, really well. Here's the thing you got to do better to get on the floor more. You know, here's the things that are going to keep you from playing, you know, the kind of minutes and having the kind of role that you want. And then we're going to sit down with every kid at least once a month and have a more formal meeting of, you know, hey, here's your role. Here's where we see you. Here's, you know, and not that kids are necessarily going to love those conversations or love what they hear, but they're going to at least know how you as a coach, you know, how you see things and what are the things that you, you know, are looking for them to do better to be able to play more. And, so I think you eliminate some of that, frustration for the kid by communicating it really early and really often and, in both informal and formal settings. You know, I think the, you know, kind of the reset, I think probably is a little bit dependent on the kid's personality and you know, and then also I think you got to evaluate, like, hey, is the 11th man or the 12th man really pissed off about being the 12th man? You know, I think you got to go, I mean, you have those conversations with them, but at the end of the day, like, are they going to is the 12th guy have the kind of personality that's going to negatively impact the entire team? If the answer is yes, then you got to address it. You got to deal with it. You got to find a way to help them find more value in their role and show them a path to a bigger role and then put that on them to, you know, to work towards that. If the 12th guy is like a kid that, you know, hey, he's just kind of a guy that's out there and the kids like him, but they don't follow him and he can kind of pout and be pissy and nobody's really going to care, then maybe you don't make as big a deal about it and you focus your energy on things that are going to have a bigger impact. But I just think, you know, we're going to try to communicate really early, really often, be really specific about the things that we want to see them do better to have an enhanced and expanded role. And then also tell them, like, hey, here's the things you got to do better in practice. You do them better in practice, then we're going to find some time in the game for you. And it might be a minute, it might be 2 minutes, it might be, you know, whatever. But we're going to watch you do those things in practice. We're going to find, you know, game time. And then if you do them well in the game, then that next game it might be 5 minutes. And then you just grow it from there. So you try to put, I think, you know, as much of the ownership back on the kid as you possibly can. And then I think you also got to do a great job of stressing, and this is what Raheem does a really good job of, is, you know, really stressing the value of every kid, you know, 1 through 12, and, like, make sure they understand that there's a lot of value in what they bring to the team, even if it's not on the floor. And, you know, at times you're going to have kids that just, it doesn't matter, and all they see is their playing time, and all they see, you know, whatever, and, you know, sometimes you just got to try to manage it and contain it and, you know, try to get through the year and address it a little bit more in the off season. It's tough. I don't necessarily have a great answer on that one.
And so on the same token, what do you, you know, when dealing with parents, what are some things you do going into the season, or if something arises during the season, how do you smooth those things out?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you have those, and we had our parent meeting a couple of weeks ago, and you have those same conversations with the parents of, hey, here's how we're going to communicate with your kid. You know, I mean, obviously, I think if we're talking about, like, hey, we're, this is more than basketball, we're trying to help these guys become better men, you know, and confrontation and communication are tough, especially for 15, 16, 17-year-old kids. So really stressing that we want the first conversation about playing time or frustrations over roles to come from the kid and, you know, have that sit-down conversation with the coach. And then from there, you know, we need to expand it and include the parents. You know, we can do that. You know, I think anymore, you know, when I was growing up and I was playing, and, you know, my dad was a football coach, but and I didn't necessarily love my high school basketball coach, but my dad wasn't involved. They never talked to, you know, the coach or the AD or you know, anybody. And, you know, and he really didn't like our coach, and I didn't really like our coach, but he didn't get involved. He didn't, you know, that just wasn't what parents did typically. You know, obviously it's a different world now. And so I think you try to completely shut the parents out, you know, you're probably opening yourself up for more issues than you need to. And so, you know, I'm going to try to be really open and honest with the parents, and, you know, I'm going to tell them, I'm not going to tell you anything I wouldn't tell your kid. And, you know, the kids know the same thing. Like, here, I'm going to be really specific. Your parents call me. Here's the things that you have to do or that you need to get better at. You know, here's why you're not playing much, and being really specific, and then giving them that path in practice to prove those things. And then, you know, playing time at the end of that. So, I think a lot of us avoid some of those communication with kids and parents that are a little awkward, hoping it doesn't become a bigger thing. And I think we're going to try to be proactive this year and hopefully, you know, eliminate or nullify some of those things. Then we'll see how it works. I always joke, you want to keep every parent and kid happy, play the four best kids and their kid, and everybody will be happy. So
exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's not easy. I've had a kid
the year they won the state, their sixth man was a junior, and he quit about mid-January because he wasn't happy with his role. You know, and him and his dad felt like he was being treated unfairly, and, you know, he missed the opportunity to be on the state title team, you know, and have a
big. He didn't come back?
He came back as a senior and played, and actually was their best player, but he didn't stick with it as a.
But maybe they don't want it if they have him, to be real.
Yeah, they may not. They may not have. So.
So.
Might have been addition by subtraction.
And the last thing, just like, you know, let's say you're going through the season, you don't have a number one leader guy, you know, a guy that's just the dog on your team, and you're trying to figure out roles. I mean, I think this might be kind of how that works out for you this year, possibly. How are you? I mean, I know you're communicating it, but what if during the season, kind of, you know, you start the season, and it's like these guys, and then you get mid-season, some other people have arose to be like the alpha of your team. How are you communicating that? How are you dealing with that? And, you know, if there's some schisms in your team, like, what are you doing as a coach to make that good?
Yeah. I think, you know, that team unity piece is always a challenge. And then if you're in a situation where you're like, you know, and we've been really vocal about communicating this with, hey, the best kids are going to play. Regardless, I don't care what the number, you know, the year next to their name says, like, we're going to play the best guys. And so, you know, trying to communicate just that mindset of, and just like, hey, that's where we're at as a program. Like, we're going to always play the best guys. The guys that give us the best chance to win, as long as they're doing the right things on and off the court, they're going to play regardless of grade, of age. And we talk about that actually, that like, hey, you know, there's some kids in our program that I think are going to develop over the course of the year, and between now and the end of the year, like, you know, they might be the 11th guy now, and by mid-January, they're the 8th guy. And, you know, what's that going to look like? And how are you going to communicate that to the kid that might be negatively impacted and that has been playing and now is not? And again, I think it's going to come back to those conversations we're having regularly, so they're not surprised about it. It's not a, and then, but what I always try to do too in practice is we always try to play those, like, I always in practice, and I mean, I do this with my sons. You know, yesterday after our practice, they were playing, you know, he had some of his buddies in and they played 3-on-3. And I said, I don't care what you do, like, you know, Grady, you're going to guard him and you're going to, you know, so that you're always playing against like the bet, you know, the guy at your spot. And so trying to make it a real competitive environment so that they're going head to head a lot, you know, and so that they, that there's, you know, there's a little competition there of, you know, hey, this is the guy that's trying to take my minutes. That's the guy that whose minutes I want, and make it a competitive thing. Because I think long term, your program as a whole benefits when, you know, practices are really competitive and guys are you know, they're battling each day to get better. And then you just gotta, you know, again, it comes back to that, you know, constantly communicating that expectation. Here's what you're doing well. Here's what, you know, here's what you're not doing well. Here's what we need more of from you, you know, and for every kid that might be different. And you know, there's a lot of kids in those situations that think that the way to earn more playing time is by scoring. And, you know, we've got a freshman kid who's a really good player and he's, you know, he's been there, you know, that grade. He's been the guy and he scored a ton. And, you know, for him to play, you know, he really wants to play varsity, and for him to play varsity, he's probably not going to score much. And so it's been, the conversations with him have been about like, hey, I'm really never going to base your playing time on how many points you score. Here's the, you know, here are the things that we're going to need from you, for you to be able to be on the floor, you know, during varsity games, and lay those things out for them, and then give them those opportunities in practice. So, I mean, I think it's kind of the same answer. It's, you know, it's never easy, and, you know, but I think it's that constant communication. And then I think the team element, you know, we're constantly, we're going to spend a bunch of time together doing things where guys, you know, guys get to know each other on a more deeper and personal level. And then we're spending time together rather than just on the court. And they haven't necessarily had that in the past. And it's pretty much just been basketball and guys go their separate ways with their groups. And so, you know, we're doing more things to try to build some of that team piece where, you know, even if a guy does take some of my minutes, I'm still going to be able to be a great teammate and recognize there's a bigger purpose here and, you know, some of those things. And hopefully it's not just wishful thinking and we'll be able to see some proof in the pudding. But, you know, we won't really know until we get into it.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, Coach Svensson is going to try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for Summer League in the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your membership with the OBCA. Membership includes access to resources and mentorship from coaches across the state and the country, as well as access to Lucio technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
All right, welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Eddie Townsend here with Ryan Svensson, boys basketball coach at Scappoose High. Well, we've talked a little bit about the shot clock that's going to be implemented next season. So now what we're going to do is, you know, I'm just quickly going to ask you a number of questions, and you'll have 35 seconds to answer as many of the questions as possible.
Right.
We'll cover a variety of topics, but try to use as quick of answers as you can. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. What is one change you would make to improve the game in the state of Oregon?
Restricted arc.
On an island, one meal for the rest of your life, what are you eating?
Prime rib.
Beach and sand or mountains and snow?
Beach.
Beard or clean shaven?
I got a beard, so I got to go beard.
Favorite NBA player?
Current Steph Curry, all times, got to probably be MJ.
Favorite college team?
Duke.
Favorite college coach?
Was Coach K. Now, oh boy. Man, I'll have to think on that one for a second. Coach K and Jay Wright, but I don't know who it would be now.
Greatest basketball memory?
I think winning state title when Peyton and that crew were seniors was pretty amazing run.
Basketball goals for the next 5 years?
You know, I want to get our program to a point like, you know, my son's going to be in our program next year and, you know, really selfishly it's just having a program that he can look back on and go, man, I had a great experience in high school. And the wins and losses are, you know, a small part of that, but just like, you know, we did a lot of great stuff as a program.
Something people may not know about you.
I got four goats. I'm a goat farmer now. And, you know, we got four goats.
Would you rather have no thumbs or no big toes?
Yeah. Random one. I'm going to go no toes.
You're down three with 30 seconds to go and you're drawing up a play for a three or to get to the hoop as quickly as you can.
I'm always of the mindset we're going to try to extend the game as long as we can. So we're going to attack the rim.
You're up three with 10 seconds to go on defense. Are you fouling?
If you know math at all, you foul. Guys that say, oh, I'll just get one stop, that's going to get you beat. You foul.
You have Jordan, Kobe, LeBron, and Steph on your team, down two with 8 seconds to go. Who are you drawing the play up for?
MJ.
LeBron or Kobe?
Kobe.
Kobe or Jordan?
Jordan.
All right, last question. Who would win in a game of one-on-one, you or your son?
Oh, boy. If we played a dribble limit, I would get beat. If I can have unlimited dribbles, I can probably back him down. I'm about twice his weight still. So as long as there's no dribble limit, I like my chances if we're playing half court.
Well, hey, Coach,
otherwise, I'm in trouble.
I appreciate you coming on.
You bet, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and, you know, it's always good to have somebody with such a wealth of experience coming on telling us, you know, all their knowledge and wisdom. So I appreciate that. And we'd just like to thank Coach Svensson for coming on. And if you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of him, you will find his contact information in the episode description. Join us next week as we continue to dive deep into the basketball wisdom of coaches around Oregon. Until then, keep grinding.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that podcast with Scappoose coach Ryan Svensson. We got a number of guests that will be coming on in the not too distant future as we traverse through the beginning parts of December and the beginning of the season. If you have any communication or you wanted to give any input or you have an idea of a guest that might be good to come on, make sure to email me at eddie.townsend@lincoln.k12.or.us. Other than that, I hope everything goes well. Happy holidays and keep grinding on that season. And good luck to all of you. Thanks a lot.